from violence to your brother to Jacob. Shame will overwhelm you. You are cut off forever. Obadiah, verse 10 of chapter 1, from the Ward Green Version, 2003, our daily scripture for today, little children. Obadiah 1 and 10. And our article, The Ark of Urartu to the Orient Express, as we resume our study of that. This is part 2, chapter 11. Paragraph 2, if I said chapter 10, that was 2 days ago that we finished that. But chapter 11, paragraph 2 now. This is one of the best and most difficult to really document as well. One of the best paragraphs. But, I mean, it's so important, I believe, because it's so ancient in terms of this information, and we've identified the time period of when certain people lived, which prior to our work really wasn't dated accurately, or to any degree in any way. It was not dated to any degree. There was no known date for any of these things, so that's why it's so exciting. And maybe we're not entirely there's so much, I have so much confidence, faith, if not confidence, in these numbers, because they've been so instrumental in changing my life. It's just been a magnificent change in the way I feel about ancient history and about all of history, and about, therefore, my own life, because I'm connected to the ancient history. And in this illustration, at the beginning of this paragraph, or chapter 2, rather, I mean chapter 11, paragraph 2, at the beginning of this paragraph 2, we see the heavenly grandfather, also known as the Jade Emperor, portrayed in this, ink, color, and gold on silk. That's how that was done. Painted with ink, color, and gold on silk from the Ming Dynasty, the 16th century of the Common Era. And we see the Heavenly Grandfather, the Jade Emperor, sitting in the lotus position, it would appear, and suspended somehow in perhaps midair there. It's hard to see, but it's a beautiful, colorful backdrop of orange with purple, pinks, fuchsias, you know, turquoise green, illustrations in the background, and his garments are brilliantly colored, absolutely, and although his main robe is it appears to be white. Now when I did the, you know, with black trim or something like black trim, and also he's got burgundy around his neck, and so many beautiful colors in this garment and in the background. And illustrations of what look like flowers at the bottom that are very large flowers, and then above those, smaller flowers. And then dark blue rectangles or squares, a row of those above that. Oh, it's just magnificent, the colors. And this was a painting that was restored digitally by yours truly on May 7th, 2011, which means really I did very little other than modify the levels and, you know, to adjust contrast and the relative levels that were somehow not optimal for displaying the color, but it made the color, I increased the saturation, I believe, a lot to make the color stand out more. And still his face is a very natural flesh color. So I think it was a successful restoration of this painting. Now Heber's, let's begin to read Heber's calendar, paragraph 2 of chapter 11, part 2 of the Orient Express. Heber's calendar was lunar, while Enmerkar's was astral or solar. Something which unfolds consistent with Sin, in brackets Nana, the moon god, as Kainan, Sin, as Kainan, the moon god, and Horus, the sun god, as Nimrod. Now, yesterday, again, I want to digress momentarily here. We had this article. Where was it? Do I still have it here? There it is, yeah. I unfortunately showed it yesterday. Again, the illustration I showed was not visible the way I showed it, but this is what it looks like here. So the darker shaded area means that the Streptococcus pyogenes strain of bacteria was inhibited at 10% of xylitol in solution. It was not more than 95% inhibited with 10% xylitol in solution. So I was saying, if you use more than 10%, you're going to be pretty well off as far as suppressing the or inhibiting the growth of Streptococcus, as shown at the bottom. Inhibited is the dark gray. And xylitol is better than erythritol. Just want to emphasize that, but all the different health benefits of xylitol. It is known as a cancer inhibitor. If you look up, does xylitol cure cancer, you get the answer immediately. Yes, it does inhibit cancer. It's a remarkable thing, in addition to all the other things, such as it inhibits respiratory infections. It inhibits, I mean, I don't know what it doesn't inhibit. Xylitol is a phenomenal natural sugar alcohol that's found in fruits, but it's not found in very high concentrations in fruits. So when you take it on its own in the pure form or dissolved in water, it becomes very powerful, but also potentially an overdose, which can cause diarrhea. Although you can build up you can build up your tolerance or your ability you can build up your resistance to the effects of xylitol just by taking it regularly. You can take, I think some people say, you know, more than, well, let's say dozens of grams of xylitol per day if you're used to it, I guess. But I'm using it as a gargling solution to kill all the germs in my throat by gargling to try to kill the bad bacteria that's causing my tendency to get strep throat, or, you know, allowing, if I don't do anything, I'd have to take massive amounts of vitamin C, which I can't do all the time. That doesn't make sense. But there's one thing about xylitol. It also causes a sore throat, in me anyway. It causes a different kind of sore throat, not the same kind. So not like strep throat. When I'm getting strep throat, I know that I'm getting it because it affects not just my throat, but other things as well. And I can tell if I'm coming down with something like that because it's a major infection. But with the xylitol, I mean, it's the sore throat from xylitol will go away after a few, you know, hours or something. But Heber's, I mean, I don't think everybody gets or has the same sensitivity, actually. to the halitol that I have. I'm very sensitive to it. Now, look at this. Now, to continue reading our paragraph, Ebers Jade Palance, Ebers Jade Palace in the Kunlun Mountains. I'm too excited to read. Ebers Jade Palace in the Kunlun Mountains. Look at it. This is so exciting. We're saying, and we've identified Eber, and so we're saying that Eber, we've identified him as the Yellow Emperor or the Jade Emperor, same person. So the Jade Emperor is the same person as the Yellow Emperor, but I haven't said that yet, have I? But Eber's Jade Palace in the Kunlun Mountains, that identifies him as the Jade Emperor, Eber, or Heber, the Jewish son of, Shem or Pakshad, then Cainan, then Shelah, then Eber, right, in that order. Do we have that? We've got that here in the part one. Cainan, Shelah, Eber, then Peleg. Shelah is also called Saleh there, and Cainan is spelled differently at times. Nimrod lived at the time of Shinnong because there was a battle between the two, with Nimrod identified as Chi-Yu. Chi-Yu and Shinnong were contemporaneous or lived at the same time. And, of course, Huangdi, the Yellow Emperor, he didn't begin to rule until sometime, just after Shinnong. But he was alive during the time of Nimrod. Also, just want to note that because we've got some information coming up. But this the most remarkable thing to me is that I made this statement about that I can barely believe that I'm reading it again now because it's so exciting that Eber was the Jade Emperor or the Yellow Emperor. He lived in the Kunlun Mountains, and his palace in Taoism was 18 stories high. And it was beheld by the king called Mu, 976 to 922. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing Mu right, if it's Mu. I'm not sure what the pronunciation is. But Heber founded Taoism. That's the absolute it's explosive kind of it's a revelation. That's it. It's a revelation of deep importance and meaning that this biblical patriarch Heber is the same as Huangdi, who is the Yellow Emperor. He's also the Jade Emperor. He's also called Heavenly Grandfather. And he founded Taoism. It's just mind-boggling. It's flabbergasting. It's just, my jaw just drops to the floor every time I see this. Cainan's cousin Ur, and I wrote it, it still completely flabbergasts me. Cainan's cousin Ur founded Ur-Kasdim, Abraham's home city. The ancient Egyptian calendar from the time of Enmerkar is thought to have been a wandering solar calendar, which we know about, right? But that's the Egyptian calendar, which wandered because they didn't have a leap year. So every year their year drifted by one day, and then eventually over time their seasons got out of step with the actual seasons, or their calendar months got out of step, that is, with the seasons. It was a wandering calendar. While the ancient Chinese calendar of the same years, which is of the time of Enmerkar is essentially, he was not an Egyptian, but the calendar began in the days just prior to Enmerkar. And we've identified Enmerkar as, whom did we identify Enmerkar as? Nimrod? I think so, yeah. Not as Osiris, but as Nimrod. But this is, these are very obscure people, personages, very obscure people because of the names being different in different languages and the identification therefore being next to impossible. So the fact that we were able to identify at all and have any confidence that Heber founded Taoism is just mind-blowing. It's just mind-boggling. But the ancient Chinese calendar of the same years as Enmerkar, like the later Jewish and Babylonian calendars, all of those were lunar calendars with arbitrary adjustments. You know, from time to time, every so many years, they would adjust it as needed to prevent wandering seasons. So, in other words, when they're, like in the case of the Babylonians, you know, Nisan was the first month of the year. If Nisan wasn't near to the spring or vernal equinox, if Nisan, the beginning of Nisan, didn't fall in the vicinity of the vernal equinox or the spring equinox, then they would, you know, sometimes it would fall short because a lunar year was shorter than a solar year. And if it fell short, they'd add another month. That's how they would occasionally need to adjust it. And therefore, they didn't have wandering seasons because the first month, Nisan, was always, in the Babylonian calendar, close to the spring equinox. Now, we have identified the sun of Arpakshad. And in fact, that was true of the Jews' calendar, the same as the Babylonians, and the Chinese. We have identified the sun of Arpakshad, Kainan, with the Sumerian moon god, Nana, who was called Sin or Suen in the Akkadian tongue. A similarity of Sin to Shem being noteworthy. Isn't that something that we could even note that Sin and Shem are similar? Sin, Shem, Suen. And Thoth is a moon god of Egypt. Shem is Loshen. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing Loshen correct in terms of the adjustment of the pitch. Shem is Loshen in the ancient Chinese Miao tongue. Within the Egyptian religion, their worship was of the sun god Horus, that is, the Egyptians. Now, Shem is identified in the ancient Chinese Miao tongue as Lo Shen. Remarkable, isn't it, that we have enough similarity in the name that we can identify Shem because he's identified by being one of the patriarchs, right? Like the three patriarchs of the Bible, Shem, Ham, and Japheth are the three biblical patriarchs, and they're identified in the Chinese mythology easily by their names or by their position in their importance and, you know, in their significance to the Chinese people and the time period also, right? They're identified. It's remarkable. We can know that the Bible is accurate because of the Chinese confirmation. But also in the Egyptian religion, they worship the sun god Horus or Nekheni, the falcon, the patron god of the city of Narmer, which was Nekhen. The city of Narmer was Nekhen, where they found the Narmer pallet. Now, with regard to Osiris, he was the leader of Egypt, we believe, right? Or at least Shinar, prior to Egypt, because Shinar was really the beginning of Egypt. And so Osiris was the leader who died after 17 with the sun passing the scorpion. But if we identify Osiris with Narmer, of course, perhaps he was not living in Shinar. Maybe he was living in Egypt. We don't really know very much. We've just made essentially, you know, what's the word? We've made what are they called? What's it called? A priori, maybe, I think. We've made a priori assertions Let's look up the dictionary of what that means, a priori. A priori. Right. Yes. It's reasoning or knowledge that proceeds from theoretical deduction rather than from observation or experience. We're making a priori, or a priori, actually, a priori assumptions, or not even assumptions, deductions, right? We've deduced that certain things are the way they are because we say they are. By the way, yesterday, I looked up page 141 of the book by John Playfair from 1822, The Works of John Playfair. Page 141, one of the references we had yesterday. In a recent study, anyway, whether it was yesterday, I'm not sure, absolutely positive now, but very recently, we see that there he mentions that Laplace had discovered that things could be found by his theory, that the Indian epoch of 3102 years before Christ, which was the tables of Tervalori, presented the motion of Saturn within one angular second of the calculation that Laplace made. So the apparent and annual mean motion of Saturn was 12 degrees, 13 minutes, 14 seconds, he calculates, but the Indian tables had 12 degrees, 13 minutes, 13 seconds, only 1 second different. And also with Jupiter, he found that they were identical, precisely 30 degrees, 20 minutes, and 42 seconds. So there's where it is in the book by John Playfair, page 141. We didn't have time for yesterday. So he was a leader, Osiris was, who ruled. I mean, Egypt and China in the early days were essentially one and the same place, because, I mean, Shinar was the earliest empire before Egypt, and Egypt followed almost in the same tradition. You know, it was almost, they were almost one and the same culture, Shinar and Egypt. Their difference, of course, being geographical, but rarely did the Egyptians hold Osiris, who was the father of Horus, to be the god of the moon. They held him to be the god of the sun, not the god of the moon, right? But rarely they did hold him to be god of the moon. Now, Kainan lived 460 years, 2 years beyond the era of Osiris. Remember we said Kainan was born 4922? No, that's not that Kainan. It's this Kainan. 3145, right. That other Kainan was the first Kainan. This is the second Kainan, right. This is Kainan born 3145 BCE. Couldn't suppress it. Had a sneeze I couldn't suppress. Rather unusual. Excuse me. Kainan, 3145, he lived until 2685. Oh, look at that. That is astounding. And I think I may have mentioned this earlier in our studies here, but I never saw this when I wrote the article, that because I didn't date the Old Kingdom Egypt in that year 2685 at the time I wrote this article. It was a few years different. But when we look at this, Kainan died. He lived 460 years and he died in 2685. So that's astounding, because he died right in the beginning, in the same year that the Old Kingdom Egypt began. There's got to be something significant, it would seem, from that we could say this is something we can make further deduction from, you know, learn more from. So let's calculate, just to show you. 3145, his birth year, subtract 2685, the Old Kingdom Egypt, year one. 460 years is how long Kainan lived. Okay? And that was part one, the Ark of Urartu. That's from paragraph 2-9, part one of the Ark of Urartu. Now, so Osiris died, we said, sometime around 2747. That's what we said. That's what we proposed as a possibility. And Kainan survived Osiris. Now, Osiris is a fascinating name. He's the same person as Mizraim, because the father of Thoth was said to be called Misor and Osiris. And compare Esor and Osir. You see the similarity. And Osiris' name is written in Egyptian, like the iris. There's a drawing of an eye, a human eye, in the name of Osiris. So Osiris, the word iris, is of course associated with the eye. It's part of the eye, the iris of the eye. And so Osiris, his name has the idea of the eye, human eye, E-Y-E, the eye, right in it. And so when they wrote his name, they wrote a drawing in the pictographic language, or hieroglyphics, they wrote a picture of the eye as part of his name. Fascinating. I think we might be able to get some more learning from that sometime. Now, Osiris is Menes, from footnote 1 to paragraph 8, 11, that's chapter 8, paragraph 11 above. Don't think we'll have time to look at that right now. But the Narmer Palette comes from Menes, or Osiris. The son of Osiris is Nimrod. And every one of these statements would probably benefit from a large amount of research to back it up. We just don't have the time to do all that, or to even mention it all, even if we did all the research. But the son of Osiris is Nimrod. Okay, like Ninus is the son of Bel. And then we know that later on there was a Bel and Ninus that were talked about later in history, around the time of Abraham, right? Correct? But may the identity of Osiris be surely Belus, the one who is said to be the original founder of the Assyrian Empire, and whose son also ruled over that kingdom after him, so also Nimrod, the son of Narmer, be the one called Ninus, who was later mistaken for the king of Assyria of Abraham's time. Who is mistaken for the king of Assyria? Well, Nimrod is. Ninus is not mistaken. He is actually the king of Assyria of Abraham's time, but Nimrod was not of Abraham's time. In Greek mythology, this now comes down to Uranus as Noah, Cronus as Ham, and Poseidon, the father of Belus, as Cush. How is it that Kainan was born to a daughter of Elam, and the Chedorlaomer of Abraham's day was king of Elam? We just confirm from the Book of Jubilees 8 and 1 that Arpakshad took a wife named Rasu-Ija, the daughter of Susan, the daughter of Elam, and they had a son called Kainam. Jubilees chapter 8, verse 1. That's where that comes from. So independently, China gives Kainan as ruling. These are all separate and individual facts. They're not interconnected necessarily. We're stating a number of different facts here, or they're either a priori statements, or they're facts that are in evidence. But back at this time, there's a lot of or a significant amount. Let's say not a lot, but a significant amount. Just maybe the tiniest amount of a priori reasoning, or statements that we're making a priori without really without having actual documentary proof. We don't have documentary evidence of a lot of these facts. We're piecing it together from all these different sources and saying these two people must be the same person because everything correlates in a certain way based on all of what we've learned of the chronology and all of everything, culture, chronology. It's taken a lot of work to get to this point. And so then we make these statements, many of which are a priori. They're not... They are based on evidence, aren't they? But there's this tiny amount, a leap of faith, which is a priori, to make the identification, for example, of Heber as the Jade Emperor. That's a huge leap of faith, it seems, but yet when you look at the evidence, it doesn't seem so far-fetched. But independently, China gives Kayanen as ruling, independently, this is from China's own history. They give Kayanen, but they don't call him Kayanen, right? They call him Fuxi, or Fohi, but they give him as ruling 2852 to 2737 BCE. Thus, before Nimrod, he rules. Because 2852 is before Nimrod's time, which is around, we said, if he's En-Merkar, then about 2751, about 100 years after Kayanen. And Eber, the Chinese history gives as Huang Di, ruling from 2699 BCE in Chinese records. In other words, Shennong ruled in between Kayanen and Huang Di, or in between Fuxi and Huang Di. What there was Shennong, who we identified with Shila, and who is also ruling from 2737 to 2699, when the Yellow Emperor Huang Di, whom we identify as Eber, began to rule in the Chinese records, but he was living long before that. And that's it. In the very times of Qi Yu Nimrod, as we mentioned a little bit earlier. So, today's study has come to an end. It's January 1st. The year is 2025 of the Common Era. The time is 1848 hours Canadian Eastern Time. Canadian Eastern Time. And we have, in my behalf, Sissy and Star saying bye for now. That was Chapter 11, Paragraph 2, Part 2 of The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. This is the beginning of a new year, 2025, of the Common Era. And that is all we have for today. Apart from the fact that all the different things, if I'd had more time, I would have talked more about xylitol. I encourage you to research xylitol as the cure of any particular disease and see what comes up. Bye for now.